It resembled a bradawl except that instead of having a round shaft, this one was U-shaped, and in place of a point there were little teeth around the edge of the U. Moments the llama looked at the instrument, and then passed it through the flame of a lamp to sterilize it. The llama Miniadon uptook my hands and said, "This is quite painful, Lobsang, and it can only be done while you are fully conscious. It very long, so try to keep as still as you can." Instruments laid out, and a collection of herbal lotions, and I thought to myself, "Well, Lobsang, my boy, they will finish you one way or the other, and there is nothing you can do about it, except keep quiet." The llama with the instrument looked round to the others, and said, "All ready? Let us start now. The sun has just set." The instrument to the center of my forehead and rotated the handle as if someone was pricking me with thorns. Me, it seemed that time stood still as it penetrated the skin and flesh, but there was a little jolt as the end hit the bone. He applied more pressure, rocking the instrument slightly so that the little teeth would fret through the frontal bone at all, just a pressure and a dull ache. Move with the llama Miniadon up looking on. I would rather have died than make a move or outcry. What he did or said was right. He was watching most closely, with a little pucker of muscles in tension at the corners of his mouth. There was a little scrunch and the instrument penetrated the bone. Its motion was arrested by the very alert operator of the instrument firmly, while the llama Miniadon up passed him a very hard, very clean sliver of wood which had been treated by fire and herbs to make it as hard as steel. The sliver was inserted in the U of the instrument and slid down so that it just entered the hole in my head, slightly to one side so that the llama Miniadon up could also stand in front of me. Nod from the latter, the operator, with infinite caution, slid the sliver farther and farther. Felt a stinging, tickling sensation apparently in the bridge of my nose. Sided, and I became aware of subtle scents which I could not identify, as replaced by a feeling as if I was pushing, or being pushed, against a resilient veil. Suddenly there was a blinding flash, and at that instant the llama Miniadon up said stop. For a moment the pain was intense, like a searing white flame. Diminished, died and was replaced by spirals of color, and globules of incandescent smoke. The metal instrument was carefully removed. The rough wood remained. It would stay in place for 2 or 3 weeks, and until it was removed I would have to stay in this little room almost in darkness. No one would see me except these three llamas, who would continue my instruction day by day. The sliver was removed, I would have only the barest necessities to eat and drink. As the projecting sliver was being bound in place so that it could not move, the llama Miniadon up turned to me and said, "You are now one of us, Lobsang. For life you will see people as they are and not as they pretend to be." Experience to see these men apparently enveloped in golden flame. Not until later did I realize that their auras were golden because of the pure life they led, and that most people would look very different indeed. As my newfound sense developed under the skillful ministrations of the llamas, I was able to observe that there were other emanations extending beyond the innermost aura. In time I was able to determine the state of a person's health by the color and intensity of the aura. So able to know when they were speaking the truth, or otherwise, by the way the colors fluctuated. The human body which was the subject of my clairvoyance was given a crystal, which I still have, and in its use I had much practice. Magical in crystals, they are merely instruments, just as a microscope, or telescope, can bring normally invisible objects into view by using natural laws, so can a gazing crystal. For the third eye, with which one can penetrate any person's subconscious and retain the memory of facts gleaned, must be suited to the individual user. Persons work best with a rock crystal. Others prefer a bowl of glass. Others use a bowl of water or a pure black disc. No matter what they use, the principles involved are the same. And was kept in almost complete darkness. The following week just a glimmer of light was admitted, the amount increasing as the end of the week drew close. And today the room was in full light, and the three llamas came together to remove the sliver. The night before my forehead had been painted with a herbal lotion. In the morning the llamas came and, as before, one took my head between his knees, the operator took hold of the projecting end of the wood with an instrument. A sudden sharp jerk, and that is all there was to it. The sliver was out. Spot left, and showed me the sliver of wood turned as black as ebony, while in my head the llama turned to a little brazier and placed the wood upon it together with some incense of various kinds. Smoke wafted to the ceiling, so was the first stage of my initiation completed. Sleep with my head in a whirl, what would Tsu look like now that I saw differently? Peer. But there was no answer to such questions yet. Came again and examined me carefully. They said that I could now go out with the others, but told me that half my time would be spent with the Lama Inyadondup, who would teach me by intensive methods. Half of my time would be spent attending classes and services, not so much for the educational side, but to give me a balanced outlook by mixing. A little later I would be taught by hypnotic methods as well. I was mainly interested in food. 18 days I had been kept on a very small allowance, now I intended to make up for it. Or I hurried, intent only on that thought. A figure smothered in blue smoke, shot through with flecks of angry red. I uttered a squeak of alarm and dashed back into the room. Looked up at my horrified expression. "There's a man on fire in the corridor," I said. Hurried out and came back smiling. "Is a cleaner, in a temper. His aura is smoky blue as he is not evolved, and the flecks of red are the temper impulses showing. Now you can again go in search of that food you want so much." Fascinating meeting the boys I knew so well, yet had not known at all them, and get the impression of their true thoughts, the genuine liking for me, the jealousy from some, and the indifference from others. It was not just a matter of seeing colors and knowing all, I had to be trained to understand what those colors meant. Included alcove where we could watch those who entered the main gates. "Say, the one coming, Lobsang. Do you see that thread of color vibrating above his heart? That shade and vibration indicates that he has a pulmonary disease, or, perhaps at an approaching trader. Look at this one. Look at those shifting bands, those intermittent flecks. A brother of business is thinking that he may be able to delude the stupid monks, Lobsang. He is remembering that he did so once before. To what petty meannesses men will stoop for money." Approached, the Lama said, "Watch this one carefully, Lobsang. Is a truly holy man, but one who believes in the literal word-for-word accuracy of our scriptures. Of those discolorations in the yellow of the nimbus, it indicates that he has not yet evolved far enough to reason for himself. Today, power of the third eye, for those who are sick in the flesh or sick in the spirit." On evening the Lama said, "Later we shall show you how to shut the third eye at will, for you will not want to watch people's failings all the time. It would be an intolerable burden all the time. As you do your physical eyes will train you to shut it and open it at will as you can the other eyes." Years ago, according to our legends, all men and women could use the third eye. Walked upon the earth and mixed with men, mankind had visions of replacing the gods and tried to kill them, forgetting that what man could see the gods could see better. The third eye of man was closed. At the ages a few people have been born with the ability to see clairvoyantly. Those who have it naturally can have its power increased a thousandfold by appropriate treatment, as I had. And it had to be treated with care and respect. Lord Abbot sent for me one day and said, "My son, you now have this ability, an ability denied to most. Use it only for good, never for self-gain." Wonder in other countries you will meet those who would have you behave as a conjurer in a fair. "This, prove us that," they will say. "Say, my son, that this must not be. The talent is to enable you to help others, not to enrich self. Whatever you see by clairvoyance, and you will see much!" Do not disclose it if it will harm others or affect their path through life, for man must choose his own path. "My son, tell him what you will, he will still go his own way." "In sickness, in suffering, yes, but do not say that which may alter a man's path." Was a very learned man and was the physician who attended the Dalai Lama. Before concluding that interview he told me that within a few days I was going to be sent for by the Dalai Lama, who wanted to see me. A visitor at the Potala for a few weeks with the Lama Minyadondup. Chapter 8. The Potala. One Monday morning the Lama Minyadondup told me that the date for our visit to the Potala had been fixed. "Be at the end of the week, Hurs, Lobsang. We must make ourselves quite perfect in our approach." "Exactly right." In a little disused temple near our schoolroom there was a life-sized statue of the Dalai Lama. "We were in audience at the Potala. You see how I do it first, Lobsang. Enter the room like this, with your eyes down. Walk to here, about 5 feet from the Dalai Lama. Put out your tongue in salute and sink to your knees. Now watch carefully, put your arms like this and bow forward, once more, and then a third time. Kneel, with your head bowed, then place the silk scarf across his feet, like this. Half across your neck. Count 10 to yourself, so as not to show undue haste. Then rise and walk backwards to the nearest unoccupied cushion. Amma demonstrated it with the ease of long practice. Continued, just a warning here, before you start to walk backwards, take a quick, unobtrusive glance at the position of the nearest cushion. And want you to catch the cushion with your heels and have to practice a breakfall to save the back of your head. Z to trip in the excitement of the moment. You as well as I went out of the room, and the Lama clapped his hands as a signal for me to enter. In I hurried, only to be stopped with, Lobsang. Are you in for a race? More slowly, time your steps by saying to yourself, Om Mani Padme Hum. Come in as a dignified young priest instead of a galloping racehorse on the Tsangpo plain. This time I entered most sedately and made my way to the statue. The lute. My three bows must have been models of perfection, I was proud of them. But, goodness me, I'd forgotten the scarf. I did it correctly, and placed the ceremonial scarf at the foot of the statue. I walked backwards, and managed to sit in the lotus fashion without tripping. Now we come to the next stage. A wooden drinking cup in your left sleeve. Tea when you are seated. The cup is held like this, wedged against the sleeve and forearm. If you are reasonably careful it will stay in place. Practice with the cup up the sleeve, and remembering the scarf. We rehearsed so that I could do it automatically. The cup would fall out and clatter across the floor when I bowed, but I soon mastered the knack of it. On the Friday I had to go before the Lord Abbot and show him that I was proficient. He said that my performance was a worthy tribute to the training of our brother Minya Dondup. The next morning, Saturday, we walked down our hill to go across to the Potala. We was a part of the Potala organization, although it was on a separate hill close to the main buildings, Temple of Medicine, and the medical school. Lord Abbot was the sole physician to the Dalai Lama, a position not altogether to be envied, because his job was not to cure an illness but to keep the patient well. Any aches or disorders were thus considered to be due to some failure on the part of the physician. Lord Abbot could not go and examine the Dalai Lama whenever he wished, but had to wait until he was sent for, when the patient was ill. Thinking of the worries of the physician, I had enough of my own. Hill we turned towards the Potala and made our way through the crowds of avid sightseers and pilgrims. People had come from all parts of Tibet to see the home of the Inmost One, as we call the Dalai Lama. If they could catch a glimpse of him they would go away feeling more than repaid for the long journeys and hardships. Pilgrims had travelled for months on foot to make this one visit to the Holy of Holies. Were farmers, nobles from distant provinces, herdsmen, traders, and the sick who hoped to obtain a cure in Lhasa. The 6-mile circuit around the foot of the Potala on hands and knees, others stretched their length on the ground, arose, and stretched again. Infirm, hobbled along supported by friends, or with the aid of two sticks. Everywhere there were the vendors selling hot buttered tea heated over a swinging brazier. Those were selling foods of various kinds. Were charms for sale and amulets blessed by a holy incarnation. Old men were the selling printed horoscopes to the gullible. Further down the road a group of cheerful men were trying to sell hand prayer wheels as a souvenir of the Potala. Scribes were there, too. For a certain sum they would write a note certifying that the person paying them had visited Lhasa and all the holy places there. Our objective was the Potala. Of the Dalai Lama was at the very top of the building, for no one may live higher. Staircase goes all the way up to the top, running outside the buildings. More like a street of stairs than a mere staircase. Many of the higher officials ride their horses up to save them from walking. We met many such during our ascent. At one point, high up, the Lama Minya Dondup stopped and pointed, "There is your former home, Lobsang. The servants are very active in the courtyard." I looked, and perhaps it would be better to leave unsaid what I felt. But with her retinue of servants who was there as well, so at that time must remain mine. Tala is a self-contained township on a small mountain. Conducted all the ecclesiastical and secular affairs of Tibet. This building, or group of buildings, is the living heart of the country, the focus of all thoughts, of all hopes. Within these walls are treasure houses containing blocks of gold, sacks and sacks of gems, and curiosities from the earlier stages. Present buildings are only about 350 years old, but they are built on the foundations of a former palace and fort on the top of the mountain. Down inside the mountain, for it is of volcanic origin, there is a huge cave, with passages radiating from it, and at the end of one a lake. Few, the very privileged few, have been here, or even know about it. But outside, in the morning sunlight, we were making our way up the steps at the clacking of prayer wheels, the only form of wheel in Tibet because of the old prediction which says that when wheels come into the country, peace will go out. We reached the top where the giant guards swung open the gold gate as they saw the Lama Miniadond up, whom they knew well. Where were the tombs of former incarnations of the Dalai Lama, and his present private residence? A large curtain of yak's wool, colored maroon, covered the entrance. Was pulled aside at our approach and we entered a large hall which was guarded by green porcelain dragons. Rich tapestries hung from the walls, depicting religious scenes and ancient legends. At tables there were articles to delight a collector's heart, statuettes of various gods and goddesses of mythology, and clays and ornaments. Away, on a shelf, rested the Book of Nobles, and I wished that I could open it and see our name inside, to reassure me, for on this day, in this place, I felt very small and insignificant. Age I had no illusions left, and I wondered why the highest in the land wanted to see me. That it was highly unusual, and it was my opinion that there was more hard work behind it all, hard work or hardship. A robed and cherry red, with a gold stole around his neck, was talking with the Lama Miniadond up. He seemed to be very well known indeed here, and everywhere I had been with him. But His Holiness is interested, and wants a private talk with him, alone. He turned to me and said, "It is time for you to go in. Lobsang will show you the door, then enter alone and pretend that it is just practice again, as we have been doing all this week." And my shoulders and led me to a door, whispering, "There is no need at all for you to worry, in you go." Push at my back to urge me and he stood and watched. Was the inmost one, the 13th Dalai Lama. He was sitting on a silken cushion of saffron color. His dress was that of an ordinary Lama, but on his head he wore a tall yellow hat which had flaps reaching to his shoulders. He was just putting down a book. Bowing my head I walked across the floor until I was about 5 feet away. Then I sank to my knees and bowed three times. A silk scarf just before I entered, now I placed it at the feet of the inmost one. He bent forward and put his across my wrists instead of, as was usual, around the neck. It now, I had to walk backwards to the nearest cushion, and I had observed that they were all quite a distance away, near the walls. First time, those cushions are too far away for you to walk backwards. Turn around and bring one here so that we can talk together. So, and returned with a cushion. Put it here, in front of me, and sit down. Was seated, he said, "Now, young man, I have heard some remarkable things about you. You are clairvoyant in your own right, and you have had the power further increased by the opening of the third eye records of your last incarnation. I have also the astrologer's predictions. A hard time at the start, but will attain success in the end. Foreign countries the world over, countries of which you have not yet heard, action and cruelty such as you cannot imagine. The way will be long and hard, but success will come as predicted." I don't know why he was telling me all this. I knew it all, every word of it, and had done since I was 7 years of age. And surgery in Tibet and then go to China and learn the same subjects all over again. Still speaking, warning me not to give proof of any unusual powers, not to talk of the ego, or soul, when I was in the Western world. "I have been to India and China," he said, "and in those countries one can discuss the greater realities, but I have met many from the West. Values are not as ours. They worship commerce and gold. The scientists say, 'Show us the soul, produce it, let us grasp it, weigh it, test it with acids, its molecular structure, its chemical reactions, proof, proof, we must have proof.' They will tell you, uncaring that their negative attitude of suspicion kills any chance of their obtaining that proof." He lightly struck a gong, and gave an order to the Lama who answered it. The latter returned bringing tea and special foods which had been imported from India. We ate. The inmost one talked, telling me of India and China. He wanted me to study really hard, and that he would pick special teachers for me. Simply could not contain myself, I blurted out, Oh, no one can know more than my master. The Lama Miniadond up, put his head back and roared with laughter. Probably no other person had spoken to him like that, certainly no other 8-year-old boy had. He seemed to appreciate it. So you think Miniadond up is good, do you? You really think of him, you young gamecock? Sir laughed again and struck the gong at his side. Ask Minia to come in, he said to the Lama who answered his summons. The Lama Miniadond up entered, and made his bows to the inmost one. Bring a cushion and sit down, Minya, said the Dalai Lama. And your character told by this young man of yours, it is an assessment with which I entirely agree. At me, and the Dalai Lama continued, you have accepted full responsibility for Lobsang Rampa's training. Plan it as you will, and call upon me for any letters of authority. See him from time to time. Turning to me, he said, young man, you have chosen well. Your guide is an old friend of my former days, and is a true master of the occult. There were a few more words, and then we rose, bowed, and left the room. He was secretly very pleased with me, or with the impression I had made. Here a few days and explore some of the lesser known parts of the buildings, he said. Rooms have not been opened during the past 200 years. Tibetan history from these rooms. One of the attendant lamas, there were none below the trunk in the Dalai Lama's residence, approached and said that we should have a room each here at the top of the building. Showed us to the rooms, and I was quite thrilled at the view, right across Lhasa, right across the plain. The Lama said, His Holiness has given instruction that you come and go as you please and that no door be closed against you. I down for a time. Scar on my left leg was still causing much trouble. Painful, and I walked with a limp. Time it was feared that I would be a permanent cripple or I arrested. Then my guide came in bearing tea and food. Time to fill out some of those hollows. Lobsang, eat well in this place, so let us make the most of it. I needed no further encouragement to eat. Led the way out of the room, and we went into another room at the far side of the flat roof. Here, to my profound amazement, the windows had no oiled cloth, but were filled with nothingness which was just visible. I put out my hand and very cautiously touched the visible nothingness. To my astonishment it was cold as ice almost, and slippery, glass. I had never seen the stuff in a sheet before. Powdered glass on our kite strings. But that glass had been thick and one could not see clearly through it. It had been colored, but this was like water. Not all, and picked up her brass tube which seemed to be part of a trumpet covered in leather. Four pieces appeared, each from inside the other. He laughed at the expression on my face, and then poked one end of the tube out of the window and brought the other end close to his face. I thought, he is going to play an instrument to his mouth, but to one eye, he fiddled about with the tube. And then said, look through here, Lobsang, with your right eye and keep the left closed. Fainted with stupefaction, a man on a horse was riding up the tube towards me. I jumped aside, and looked around, and he was shaking with laughter. Suspiciously, thinking that he had bewitched me. His Holiness said you were a master of the occult, I said, but do you have to make fun of your pupil more, and motioned for me to look again. With considerable misgivings I did so. And my guide moved the tube slightly so that I saw a different view. Scope I seen one. Never have I forgotten that sight of a man on a horse riding up inside the tube towards me. When a Western person says impossible and about the occult, that was certainly impossible to me. Number of telescopes with him when he returned from India, and he was very fond of looking over the surrounding countryside. Here, too. I looked into a mirror for the first time and I certainly did not recognize the horrible looking creature that I saw. A pale faced little boy who had a large red scar in the middle of his forehead, and a nose which was undeniably prominent. I had seen my faint reflection before in water, but this was too plain. I have not bothered with mirrors since. Telescopes or mirrors, but people did not want such things. They want wheels. And for so-called civilization of commercial life, there is no time for the things of the mind. At early pace, so that our esoteric knowledge could grow, and expand. I have for thousands of years known the truth of clairvoyance, telepathy, and other branches of metaphysics. While it is quite true that many lamas can sit naked in the snow, and by thought alone melt the snow around them, such things are not demonstrated for the delight of the mere sensation seeker. Some lamas, who are masters of the occult, definitely can levitate, but they do not display their powers to entertain naive onlookers, always makes sure that his pupil is morally fit to be trusted with such powers. It follows from this, that as the teacher must be absolutely sure of the moral integrity of the student, metaphysical powers are never abused, as only the right people are taught in no way magical, they are merely the outcome of using natural laws can best develop in company, and others who have to retire to solitude climb lamaseries and enter a hermit's cell. The stone walls are thick, perhaps 6 feet thick, so that no sound can penetrate. The hermit enters, at his own desire, and the entrance is walled up. There is no light whatever, no furnishings, nothing but the empty stone box. Food is passed in once a day through a light-trapped, soundproofed hatch. Stays, first for 3 years, 3 months and 3 days. Life, and on the nature of man. For no reason whatever can he leave that cell in the physical body. During the last month of his stay, a very small hole is made in the roof to allow a faint ray of light to enter. Enlarge it day by day so that the hermit's eyes become used to the light once again. Otherwise he would go blind as soon as he emerged. Very often these men return to their cell after only a few weeks, and stay there for life. It is not such a sterile, worthless existence as one might suppose. Man is a spirit, a creature of another world, and once he can become free of the bonds of the flesh, he can roam the world as a spirit and can help by thought. Thoughts, as we in Tibet well know, are waves of energy. Matter is energy condensed. It is thought, carefully directed and partly condensed, which can cause an object to move by thought. Another way, can result in telepathy, and can cause a person at a distance to do a certain action. It's so very difficult to believe, in a world which regards as commonplace the act of a man speaking into a microphone guiding a plane to land in dense fog, when the pilot can see no ground at all, and no skepticism. Man could do this by telepathy instead of making use of a fallible machine. Esoteric development did not entail this prolonged seclusion in total darkness. Another form which is not available to the larger number of men who want to become hermits is directed towards a specific purpose, and by direct order of the Dalai Lama. I was taught such things by another method, as well as by hypnosis, which cannot be discussed in a book of this nature. Suffice to state that I was given more enlightenment than the average hermit can obtain in a very long lifetime. To the Potala was in connection with the first stages of this training, but more of that later. Fascinated by that telescope, and I used it quite a lot to examine the places I knew so well. Upi explained the principles in minute detail so that I could understand that there was no magic involved, but just ordinary laws of nature. Was explained, not merely about the telescope, but lessons were given as to why a certain thing happened. Oh, it is magic. Without having an explanation of the laws involved, once during this visit I was taken to a perfectly dark room. The Lama Minyadon Up said, "Now you stand here, Lobsang, and watch that white wall." The flame of the butter lamp and did something to the shutter of the window. It on the wall before me a picture of Lhasa, but upside down. I shouted with amazement at the sight of men, women, and yaks walking about upside down. I could, and everything was the right way up. The explanation about bending light rays really puzzled me more than anything. How could one bend light jars and pitchers with a soundless whistle? That was quite simple and not worth a further thought, but bending light, a special piece of apparatus, consisting of a lamp the light of which was hidden by various slats, was brought from another room. Could I understand the matter? I could see the rays bend, and nothing surprised me after. The storerooms of the Potala were crammed full of wonderful statues, ancient books, and most beautiful wall paintings of religious subjects. Many of them, consider them to be indecent, portray a male and a female spirit in close embrace, but the intention of these pictures is very far from being obscene, and no Tibetan would ever regard them as such. These two nude figures in embrace are meant to convey the ecstasy which follows the union of knowledge and right living. Horrified beyond measure when I first saw that the Christians worshipped a tortured man nailed to a cross as their symbol. Such a pity that we all tend to judge the peoples of other countries by our own standards. Centuries gifts have been arriving at the Potala from various countries, gifts for the Dalai Lama of the time. Nearly all those presents have been stored in rooms, and I had a wonderful time turning out and obtaining psychometrical impressions as to why the things were sent in the first place. An education in motives. My impression as obtained from the object, my guide would read from a book and tell me the exact history, and what had happened after. And more frequent, you are right, Lobsang, you are doing very well indeed. Leaving the Potala, we made a visit to one of the underground tunnels. Is it just one, as I would see the others at a later date?